little alien show. She actually took it very well. I was very surprised that I said it or that it was, you know, well received. But come check us out. We're excited to be on the Paranormal Radio Network, and we'll be there every Friday night, 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'm Alien Photog. The end.
Tree Sheridan, host of A Global Focus.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
To the Church of Mavis radio show with your hosts Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Weddle. It's Saturday night and it's summertime and it's burning up and people are out drinking booze and mating. It's 100 degrees in Florida. It's really hot. I almost died going to the mailbox.
Thanks, dude. That's all I want to think about is sweaty, boozy sex.
All right, tonight's guest, Amanda Hall with the Appalachian Truth Seekers and a show entitled Giving Up the Ghost. We're going to interview their investigative paranormal team and hear about the area they live in and some of the places they visit and their perceptions about ghosts. So, welcome to the show, Amanda Hall and Appalachian Truth Seekers. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us, Jeff.
Nope. If you could, tell us your names and what you do on the team exactly.
Sure. We'll go around. Of course, I'm Amanda Hall. I'm the founder and team leader of Appalachian Truth Seekers. And we've got Kristen.
I'm Kristen Manuel. I am the archivist for the group.
Can you call me okay? God?
What was that?
Can you hear okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, okay. We can hear you.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Jason Lester, I'm the treasurer, and when they get sent into everywhere first.
All right. Is that everyone?
No more. I'm Becky Arnold, and I'm the web administrator. And we've got some other members, but they weren't able to join us tonight. They're listening in, though.
Now, do you all go out and do investigations, like the web person and the other person?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're all active. Yeah. We're all active investigators. It's just in order to... It's kind of like running a business behind the scenes in order for us to function with the website and, you know, where we take membership, you know, dues, and we have marketing and stuff like that just in order to make sure everything functions. Like, Kristen's the archivist, so anytime we're going to somewhere historical, she will pull information about the history, what supposedly happened there, et cetera. So it's, everybody has their own individual positions as well as active investigators.
You know, I got a question about ghost hunting in particular. Would you agree with the statement that pretty much everywhere that you would investigate, you would find some sort of activity? Just meaning that because people have lived pretty much everywhere, you know? Could you go to your, an old house or something in your town and is active as the prison you just went to?
Well, I personally do not feel like every place I've ever investigated at has been active. Like, there's been some residential places that I've been to in the past that didn't have any activity at all. We were able to actually debunk or prove what was going on with the family without it actually being paranormal. From my experience, anything that's like a fort, a hospital, or a prison where there's been lots of war, sickness, or violence, you almost always will get activity.
Okay, yeah, because this house that I moved into, there was an old lady that me and my dogs kept seeing on the stairs.
Okay.
And we had, I found some pristine, school books and an atlas with raised pages and everything that I assumed they were hers, because the same people lived in this house since the 30s. Those got ruined, and I had to throw them away, and she disappeared.
Now, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I don't know if you're familiar with John Zaffis or not and his life work, but he focuses on haunted objects a lot. And his belief is that an object can be what's causing the activity in a home, not necessarily the home itself. And I do believe that, too. I believe that objects, homes, and the homes on. Like, I've been to some residential places that I don't think it's the home. I don't think it matters what home would be on the land. I think it's the actual land. And, you know, you research that, and there's been civil wars there and or Indians and things like that. And it's just, I think that it just goes beyond just the house. So I absolutely think that if you were seeing her before and then after you threw those objects away, you weren't seeing her, her energy might have been attached to those objects.
Right. Do you think maybe that if places of death and violence and pain, do you actually think that the energy, the negative energy, actually does something to, I don't know how to phrase this, our dimension, to where it's like scarred? To where, like say Gettysburg, that whole battlefield, there was so much pain and death and destruction going on. Do you think that all that negative energy from that area could actually do something to our realm to actually kind of highlight it?
I think it's a case-by-case basis on the person because, for example, on our team, Kristen and I are sensitive to our surroundings. I wouldn't say that we're psychic, but we are sensitive to our surroundings. And so when we go to places that might have activity, we usually are able to feel something. We don't know exactly what we're feeling, but, for example, like Waverly Hills is really sad, but a lot of people and children died of TB there. And, of course, the prison is more of an ominous, creepy, negative kind of feeling. And then, of course, we have other members on the team, like Becky and Jason, and they're not sensitive to anything. So I think that pretty much what you're saying is, yes, I do think it makes an imprint on our dimension, but I think it depends on the person and how sensitive they are to their surroundings.
Yeah, do you think they have a little wall up to keep the skeptic going?
I don't know. I'll let them answer that.
Do you find yourself kind of just holding back a little bit? It's like not getting excited over an EVP and you're just trying to...
Sometimes it's really hard not to get excited because, yes, I was always a skeptic, but I wanted that full-bodied apparition to appear at the bottom of my bed, or I wanted to hear some ghost whispering in my ear. And when we go to these places and you have direct questions that you present out there answered right back, and not just random answers, but when we, specifically in the prison, there was a question answered, you know, how many people are in this room right now? And through a PX box that one of the girls had there from Mountaineer Paranormal, it immediately answered 8. and there were eight of us sitting there, and it's hard to not get excited about a direct question being answered like that, whether you're a skeptic or not. It makes you think about it a little harder.
You know, it kind of bothers me. It's kind of disheartening to hear all these places that are still haunted by all these spirits and they haven't moved on. It makes you wonder if you have something traumatic in your life that when you die, you're just going to wander around.
That is actually the whole reason why I'm in this field, because if that very answer right there got answered for me tomorrow, I'm not sure if it would be, I would be wanting to explore it as much, because, you know, I come from a very religious upbringing in my family, and what I was raised to believe and what you learn about when you do this evidence is contradictory. Yes, I do know something absolutely happens after we die, but I can't even answer that question. And having those questions and being an analytical person by nature, I don't know how to answer that. And actually, it scares me, quite frankly, like to think about, you know, when I die, okay, am I going to be wandering around screaming, I don't want to die, not know I'm dead? I mean, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah, well, religion will keep you from, it'll actually keep you from exploring these topics. Because all your answers, you already have all your answers, you know.
And see, I'm one of the people, I've always questioned everything, and so here I am, you know. So
I think so. Don't worry, I'm not going to go on a religious rant.
But I think it opens up more questions, so for me it does.
If you're open-minded about it, that religious component shouldn't shut you off. You know, it begs for you to explore more.
Yeah, it helps us evolve. You evolve as a person, and if you just assume you already have all the answers, you know, it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong, then you quit looking.
Exactly. And, I mean, some of the most spiritual, I'm not going to use the term religion because I'm not necessarily a big organized religion person, but some of the most spiritual people I know are into ghost hunting or into some kind of paranormal research. You just can't do that field and be active in it and not understand there's something going on after physical realm is gone for you, you know? And so when people are like, oh, you must not believe in anything spiritually to do ghost hunting, that's actually the complete opposite, you know?
Yeah, because we've actually physically probably had an experience.
Right.
That you know, whoops, dogs.
The hounds of hell have spoken. So I'm curious about this ghost box. Could someone tell us about the ghost box, exactly what it is, how it works, and things of that nature, about this box of necromancy?
You know, I'm going to actually intro this and then turn it over to Kristen, our archivist, because the box really liked her. We were on the psych ward around dead time, and it responded to all of us. If you go to our website, it called me some pretty colorful names. It called Jason some pretty colorful names. It actually touched Becky's book bag, whatever was communicating with us. But with Kristen, though, it just kept coming back around with her. I'm going to let her share that story with you.
Okay.
They were just sitting in the psych ward during bed time, and they turned the box on. Of course, it, you know, kept playing with the words in it. Pretty much when the spirit manifests this energy and it pushes through the box, it goes through words. I think it was phonetic and
dictionary mode, and it goes on different AM, FM frequencies is what it runs on.
Okay.
Right, it just scans them.
So we're sitting there, and there's actually one that says manual on there, and then it starts calling me teacher. Every time that it referred to me as teacher, it called me Jesus and talked about light. Pretty scary stuff.
Hey, can you get a little closer to the phone?
I'm trying to self-take one of the grids. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Is that a little bit better?
Yes, that's great.
Okay. Would you like me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, we were sitting in the psych ward at bedtime, and you were sitting there talking about with the boss just about general things, or I sent, you know, how many people that it had in the room, etc. And for some reason, the box kept calling me out as teacher. Every time it would refer to me as teacher, it kept calling me Jesus, kept talking about light. It called me a couple colorful names as well. Would you want me to go into full detail about Rotodom and all that, or do you show me?
You know, I've said this before, if I was a ghost, I would be messing with you guys like crazy if you came in with one of those boxes.
Well, you know, they say that, you know, energies that are, you know, we are like we, you know, our energy we have when we're alive is what we are like when we're dead. So if you were a crappy person, you're a crappy ghost. If you were a mischievous person, you're a mischievous ghost, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if you're somebody that likes to mess with people's heads, then absolutely.
Yeah, I don't really mess with it.
I have trouble with the concept of a ghost being trapped on Earth and not being able to go somewhere. I mean, it's certainly possible, but I have trouble with it for some reason. I see a lot of these ghost paranormal experiences, I think, level are what I like to call fluxes in the matrix. For instance, you're in your now moment now, and who's to say if you see someone, like for instance, a lady told me she saw a pioneer woman ghost in her living room, basically a woman dressed up like pioneer times in her living room, just standing there staring at her. So who's to say this ghost is, you know, a lost, undead, zombie spirit or whatever, or just a glimpse into the past? Like a flux in the matrix to where you in your now moment may see another time period multidimensional that's happening. I just think there's a lot of teachers and guides and things like that in the afterlife who help ghosts or beings that would get stuck. I mean, certainly possible, but I think also the time flux scenario of maybe seeing a past reality is also definitely an option as well. So what do you think about that as far as seeing spirits and things of that nature?
You know, Einstein talked about wormholes in time and how, you know, like different periods in history are going on the exact same time that we're going on. This just happens to be the time that we are in right now, and sometimes those layers between our time period and their time period get mixed up when we see glimpses of them and vice versa. I think it's what you're touching on. And I do think that there is definitely a possibility with that, because there's been too much odd things, like the lady you described that saw the pioneer lady. Absolutely. How do we know that she's not seeing a glimpse into history? But what makes me question what's going on in other realms of the paranormal is when you ask an intelligent question and you get a response, because Einstein's theory is that these people in their history, say in the Civil War time, they don't know that we exist, you know, they don't know that we exist now in 2011 and vice versa, so there should be no way we should ever be able to communicate with them. So when you ask an intelligent question and you get an intelligent response back, like on an EVP or a ghost box or whatever, then it has to make you wonder, what is communicating with me then?
Yeah, I remember watching a Ghost Hunters episode, and they were like at a really old Cincinnati train station. I think it was Cincinnati. And they were down on the platform, and they were, you know, everything was just lighting up like crazy. They were getting all these intelligent responses back and everything. And they asked this one lady just, well, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm waiting for the train. I'm waiting for the train to come. So, I mean, it was an intelligent response to their question.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you have to ask the question is, and that's exactly why, like, again, I do this field. I'm a really analytical personality by nature, and I just want to know why it works and why it happens and what's going on. And I think any time, if you are a person that questions a lot and you have a personal paranormal experience happen to you, it makes you want to ask all the questions like, why did it happen, what makes it happen, etc.
Here's my philosophy on this. You're never going to get all the answers, ever.
I know, that's why I love it.
But, yeah, but it's the journey along the way that makes you a your spirit smarter, more inquisitive. You know what I mean? I mean, you walk a different path, and I think that gives you a, you know, a one up in the next wherever we end up, you know.
Yeah, I know. A part of me doesn't want all the answers at all, because at that point, you know, I wouldn't have the love for it anymore. It's the constant. It's like one question opens another question, and the first question answered, and that's what drives me and makes me passionate about this field, is because it's such an unknown territory.
And you know what? The answers usually suck anyways.
That's true.
You know what I mean? They're disappointing, and it's like, oh.
Tell us about the penitentiary, West Virginia State Penitentiary. I'd like to get into that first off.
Okay. Well, I think I would like everybody to kind of share a little bit about how they personally felt about the prison, because everyone goes in there has, you know, we're a team, we have a team experience, but everybody also has their own personal experience too, you know. But for me, it's awesome. It's very active. If you are into paranormal research, if you're a ghost hunter, whatever you title yourself, if you're into that, I absolutely 100% recommend it. It is very creepy, though. Just to kind of give a quick synopsis, it's nothing but violence, death, and sex. I mean, that's the prison. Yep, that's the prison.
That's the American way, man.
And, you know, there was dirty guards, dirty wardens, you know, throughout history that ran it their own way. And so when you go, it's a really heavy, ominous feeling. And honestly, some of the EVPs on our website are amazing. I have never in my life gotten EVPs that are that strong before. So I would recommend anyone that wants to go somewhere that's active and get a really good experience, I would say they need to go. They need to go ahead and book themselves and go and experience it. It was awesome.
Did you ever at any time in the prison get a feeling that you were trying to be controlled? Because there's always a huge amount of control in those situations where other people are being controlled, and, you know, it starts at the top and works its way down, everything from the warden to the guards to, you know, the guards control stuff, and then the inmates control stuff, and they control each other and you know, just have sway over each other. Do you ever get that feeling to where you're being manipulated?
I personally didn't get that feeling. If anything, my personal experience, I got the feeling that we were the ones on the outside. They were the ones that still felt like they were incarcerated. And if anything, we had the upper hand because we were the ones that were on the outside.
Right.
But I'm going to let whoever wants to take and talk about, you know, their feelings about the prison.
We felt like you could almost, and I'm not sensitive at all, but you could almost feel a complete lack of control in there as I walked through. It was much harder for me to imagine the guys actually sitting in the cells than it was to imagine them being able to roam around, because there were areas of the prison that they were allowed to roam free and do whatever they wanted to do, which led to a lot of the violence and the sex and the attacks. You know, it definitely, not being sensitive, there were two spaces within the prison that just gave me the absolute creeps, and those were some of the places that we got our really good EVPs from.
You know, you probably are sensitive. You just need to have an experience, and that will flip a switch inside your brain, and you will think completely different.
And maybe so, but I need it to be massive. Like I said, I want to see the full-bodied apparition standing at the bottom of my bed, or, you know, something, you know, being a male, we're visual creatures, so I need to see something. I can hear EVPs all day long, and they're fantastic, and it does make me believe more, but I do want to see that ghost out there.
like the least. I have no sensitivity.
This is Becky.
I'm Becky. I have no sensitivity to it. I mean, I fell asleep while we were there.
She did. She fell asleep in the prison in a psych ward cell. No joke.
And that was when we got the best EVP. I mean, I had absolutely no red feeling in there, no. The only thing I was scared of was that a bat was going to land in my head.
A spider crawling in.
There was a lot of bats in there, and I don't like flying creatures. I didn't feel anything. I mean, the only thing I felt was I was walking through the dark, and I was afraid of what I was going to trip over.
Right.
But now we got the EVP.
And she almost pissed herself.
And I believe that there's something there, but I just don't feel it. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't freak me out because I don't feel it.
Do you think it's maybe that you're not trying to, that you're convinced that you don't have it? And so you're just, you're not in tune to it.
I just don't think I do. I was never that kid that was scared to go to bed at night, that something was under my bed. I was the one always telling the ghost stories. I just don't pick up on things. I pick up on the living a lot more than I pick up on the dead.
She's for sure. Yeah, she's really good at, you know, sizing a person up, you know. It cracks me up. She's really good at that. But what really cracks me up, though, is that Becky is by far our least sensitive person on the team. And when I started the team, I wanted a really eclectic mix of people. You know, I wanted some believers, I wanted some skeptics, et cetera. And what's so funny is that she is the only one that physically got her book bag touched while we were there.
Probably while they were messing with her.
Yeah, we were sitting in what they call the Alamo, which was where they kept the hardest of the criminals, death row type criminals, and I stayed quiet most of the night. I don't provoke, I don't even try to converse with them. And I had a backpack sitting beside of me with my water in it and some granola bars. And you started hearing rustling. Well, Jason looks over at me with his evil look of, like, stop. And he hit it, like, stop. And I just threw my hands up. I said, I'm not touching it. We got back out to the main area, and I opened my bag up, and every one of my granola bars from a closed box were opened and turned upside down. okay.
But when she threw her hands up, though, the rustling kept happening. It sounded like there was a rat in her book bag going through her crap.
Just like a little mouse. You know, have you ever heard a mouse in the wall? That's exactly what it's like in my book bag.
And
could have been a ghost mouse.
I know, ghost mouse. Well, who knows, maybe. But when we got back, though, and played back the audio to listen to the ghost box, right at that point, when someone asked, were you in her bag, it says,
hungry. Actually, we have the EVP on our website.
Yeah, it says hungry hunter's food. And what we think that it was trying to say is hungry hunting for food.
Right.
So that was really interesting because she's our least sensitive and decided to pick on her.
And right after it said it, the ghost box said kiss, and my response was, I don't want to kiss you, I want you to leave my stuff alone. But I didn't feel like anything was there. You know, a lot of people would say they felt like a cold breeze or, you know, they felt, I didn't feel a thing, I just heard it.
So what are some of the other EVPs?
If you want to listen, let's go to our website. We're AppalachianTruthSeekers.org. And I know we've got at least three Class A EVPs currently, and we're still finding stuff as we're going through evidence. But
One of them actually sounds like one of you guys say something.
Yeah, it does. It sounds just like us, but the thing is, we only have two males on our team. You've heard Jason talk all night. He does not have that deep of a voice, and Chris, our other team member, doesn't either. And that is probably the deepest, ugliest voice I have heard in a long time.
And that's a West Virginia accent. I guarantee that.
Yeah.
And
what does it say?
I'm sorry?
What does it say?
Well, this was actually, it's weird because the sun was coming up. It was like close to 6 o'clock in the morning when we got our best EVPs so far. Of course, we're still going through edits, but we are basically saying, you know, now's the time to speak. We're getting ready to call it a night, you know, close up the investigation. And we get a help and a now, and it's a really breathy, like, you know, help and then now. And then there's a few minutes. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it sounds like. And then as we're starting to get up and move out of the room, there's a really loud, I don't want to die. And it's really weird because when I first heard it last night, I didn't have it pulled up on our software. We have a software we pull stuff out of. I was just playing it on Windows Media Player. So when I first heard it, it just sounded like, wah, 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 wah to me, okay? But then I was like, okay, that's weird. I didn't know what it was. I was like, I don't know if that's words or what it is. So I pulled it up from the software, saved it, emailed it to Becky and said, you need to listen to this and tell me what you think this is. That's when she called me and she says, she didn't say hello or anything. She goes, oh, my God, I think he's saying I don't want to die. So we pulled it up, and sure enough. But that's just, and then there's a huge loud bang at the very end of that. But the only thing I can think of is that he was trying to get our attention, and we're leaving because we can't hear him because it's an electronic voice phenomenon, you know, and he was furious. I've never heard an EVP that loud and that clear before. I mean, I've gotten some good ones from Waverly before, but nothing like that. It's crazy.
But if you really listen to it, it doesn't sound like one. It sounds like it's loud enough to be like one of you guys talking, but it doesn't sound like a human talking. With you.
You say a human talking?
It does not sound like a human talking, like in your group.
Oh, I know.
In your group talking.
To me, it sounds like it's on a different frequency than we are. And also, when I had it pulled on the software, the frequency wave that we're on and the frequency wave that this voice is on is a different shaped wave, if that makes sense. And so unless people mess with software like that, it's like a different frequency.
Yeah, the word die kind of wavers kind of weird if you listen to it.
Yeah, it's almost staticky kind of.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like the waves are equally as big as ours, which is amazing because most EVPs are really tiny waves, and human speaking are bigger waves on these audio software, which differentiates that, you know, they're softer. A lot of times they're just a whisper or whatever. But this one, his voice is the same size waves as ours, but the shape of the wave, which is the frequency that he's talking on versus what we're talking on, is different. It's
right.
Just weird. It doesn't even sound human. I totally agree with you. It's really odd. It's amazing. This is kind of like Christmas for ghost hunters. It's amazing. I mean, I'm just so glad we got it.
Have you noticed in places where there's been more violence or pain that the EVPs don't require as much energy? Meaning, like, if you go to some place that's kind of like just not really, you know, really hectic or anything like that. There wasn't a lot of death and destruction, just, you know, your regular stuff. And they have to pull energy from somewhere to talk to you. When you're in a place of great violence, do you have equipment that will, like, you know, lose power or whatever when you get something like that? Do you notice any of your equipment going goofy when you get an EVP like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a flashlight I had just purchased, just taken the Energy Saver tab out of it, and within the first 10 minutes of us being in the kitchen area, it died. I had to replace the battery twice on it. Our infrared camera was fully charged. We had fully charged it in the hotel the entire day before going to the investigation. There was a room that Kristen
had felt really drawn to. It was on the outside towards the field where they used to...
Right above the sugar shack.
Right above the sugar shack where the guards used to sit at, and there's a room back there. So Jason figured he would go back there and videotape because she was drawn to that area. And he wasn't even back there 5 minutes. The entire battery was zapped. We were not able to get any long audio because it completely killed our infrared camera. And we've got a digital voice recorder that Becky was running that keeps shorting out, but not shorting out. It was almost like it was draining, but then it would come back. She's actually got it recorded where it sounds like it's like losing power and then coming back up again. And I watched her right before we went into the prison. She actually replaced the batteries in it, so it was fully charged and ready to go. So, yeah, we had quite a bit of equipment that was messed with.
Yeah, that kind of tells me there was a lot of activity. They just weren't talking. They were just kind of, you know, mealing around. Who the hell are these people? You know, just could have been just watching you. You know, you can go in a room, all your stuff die, and you don't get anything there, you know?
Yeah, that's their place. That's, you know, if you have to call it anything, that's their playground, not ours. We're
intruding on them. That's probably like an energy. Your batteries are probably like an energy drink on that side.
Yeah.
And a ghost probably knifed another ghost to get it.
Yeah, and another reason why places like that, like, that are open to the public, like the forks that are open for investigations, the prisons, and, of course, the hospitals that are now open for investigating, there's constantly groups like our own and public hunts and day tours and all of that that come out there and investigate. And so these places, these entities constantly humans, live people in there with equipment, you know, constantly. So they're constantly pretty much charged. And that's why I think another reason why those places stay so active.
Yeah, it could be the same as it was on this side. You have more dominant entities that are, you know, getting most of the energy, and you have, you know, other ghosts that are not. They're just kind of hanging out.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
So, how about orbs?
Well, orbs are interesting because I'm really, really, really critical of orbs. You know, I'm definitely a believer of the paranormal, but I'm also a big believer in science. And orbs are very tricky because humidity, dust, insects, etc. can cause a fake orb. But if you capture an orb that's truly paranormal in nature, it will have its own light source, or that's my personal opinion of what I've seen. And usually when you take a picture, the ones that are kind of clear or see-through, that are just like a big bubble, those are usually like dust or insects or something. But the ones that are like solid-looking or actually have colors on the inside of them that are bright, that have like their own light source, those are the ones that are typically paranormal in nature.
So what do you think they are? I've heard different people say they're spirits or all kinds of different theories on orbs as far as spiritually what they are. When it comes
There's
to
a lot of opinion out there about them, a lot of various opinions, actually. One is that it is the most purest form that energy can be in, is the sphere. And therefore, when you get one that's paranormal in nature, it's not quite strong enough to do a full-body apparition or a form, and so that's its purest form, is the sphere. But other people believe that it's just energy, just some kind of paranormal energy that you're capturing, and others believe that you're actually capturing a spirit or an entity on film. It really depends on who you're talking to and what their belief system is in the paranormal.
You know, I've seen pictures from India where they'll have pictures before everybody starts doing their meditation, and they'll have, you know, like 50 people sitting down and meditating, and nobody's moving around. There's other pictures being taken. There's no, you know, dust or you know, just the normal stuff floating around, and all of a sudden these orbs start to appear, and but they're almost like it's a round circle of light with like an amoeba inside.
That's exactly, that's an orb. That is an orb. You're describing a normal orb.
Yeah, and they all look the same, and there's thousands of them as they start doing this meditation as a group, and they're all in tune and everything. It was really
right.
Cool, man. It was kind of freaky.
That just shows you that as far as energy goes and life as we know it, that everything's connected. Everything is connected, you know? And so when they're meditating, they're obviously drawing energy to them. And so that's pretty awesome that you're able to see that.
Well, and that's the basis for Buddhism as well.
For what?
In Buddhism, it's one of the principles for Buddhism as well. With Buddhism, they believe that you don't die, go to heaven or hell. They believe that you become a ball of energy. That's what you
right.
go. That's what you turn into. So it's just interesting, you know, the different principles and everything, and that you do when people are meditating. I mean, that's when, you know, with that religion, that's when you actually become one and one. So, you know, it's just interesting that you would see orbs and stuff with that. And, you know, I just think it kind of backs up a lot of evidence. It's pretty interesting stuff. I mean, if you really look into it, pretty interesting. So.
Yeah, that's why I don't like. If there's a spider in my house, I put it outside because I don't want to, you know, I got some guilt thing going on about killing its energy. But I got a little story about my truck that I just got rid of. I honestly believe inanimate objects have energy and can be influenced by your positive energy. I had this truck, and it was just the guy who had it before did not take care of this truck. And I finally had to get rid of it. I couldn't get it inspected. And all of a sudden, I had a couple weird things happen. And then Saturday, my neighbor came over and knocked on the door and said, hey, your lights keep going on and off in your truck. So I go outside. It's in the middle of the day, and my cab light is going on, like the one above the steering wheel. It's going on, then it'll go off, and it'll go on. But the dome light one, it was an Explorer, was just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it would be off, and then it would start blinking again. And the lady's standing there talking to me, and I turned to my truck, and I said, "Don't start with me." And it stopped. And she was standing there, and first she thought I was talking to her.
That's funny.
And I went over there, and I opened the door, and I went in there, and I said, "I'm sorry. I can't keep you." I shut the door, and I went back in the house.
Christine.
I know. It's like your truck is like the movie Christine, but I totally think that... you know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about objects being haunted. The only thing that means is that objects carry our energy. And, you know, even though, you know, with your truck, you know, you're still alive, obviously, but your energy, it's I don't know how to explain it, but I totally agree with that, though, because...
When I got to work every day, I said, "Thanks, man, for getting me to work." Shut the door and went inside. When I got home, I said, "Thanks, man, for getting me home," and I patted it on the seat or on the hood and walked inside. It was like saying goodbye or "I love you" to loved ones. It was, you know what I mean? It was just something I did for 3 years.
Maybe it was a transformer and you just didn't know it.
Maybe, man. Thing didn't have any air. It had to go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
in Florida.
I'm in Philly.
Okay.
Jeff's Jetway and...
Yeah, I'm dying in Florida. That's why I'm so quiet. So I'm curious to everyone's take on death. What do you think happens when you die? Do you think either a fear of death or a not knowing of death is why you're seeking these paranormal experiences?
Well, this is Amanda. I'll start and we'll go around. But I personally... I'm terrified of death. more so now than ever, because I don't know what happens when we die. I know something happens, and I know what I believe spiritually. I'm not going to get into that, of course, but I some of the stuff we capture, the evidence, I know that there's something going on that defies anything I've ever known, and so it's kind of scary, and it's what drives me. I guess what I'm trying to say is when I'm scared of something, I want to go towards it, I guess. So death freaks me out, and that's why I'm in this field. I guess that sums it up.
Nice.
I don't know. This is Becky. I think death does scare. If it doesn't scare you, then in my opinion, there's something wrong. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to die and leave what you have here. But I believe that most good people, 99% of the good people, will move on to something else, something better. But I think it's the more people who have something that they need to finish, or they felt like they're scared of where they're going to go, that are the ones that are stuck. Like if you were evil and you knew you were going to go to hell, why would you want to go there? I mean, yeah, I'm going to stay in limbo. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to haunt people before I'm going to go burn in hell. That's kind of the way I look at it, more so than really being terrified, no.
This is Jason, and I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but I don't have a fear of death. It's, I'm pretty laid back, so I know that it's inevitable. There's nothing you can do about it unless you're just stupid and trying to do things that are going to get you killed. Otherwise, it's coming whether you like it or not, so I don't have any fear of it at all. You know, you try to live a good life, and in the end, you'll find out, I guess. And so as far as how that transfers to ghosts or spirits that don't go one place to the other, you know, I can't rightfully say there is a heaven or a hell. We may all just turn into spirits. You may just blink out of existence completely. You may be reincarnated as a bug or a ball of energy. So I don't have a particular fear of any of those things happening. I can't do anything about it one way or the other. I can just try to live a good life and see what happens when I get there.
This is Kristen, and I think Jason pretty much summed up what I had to say. I feel pretty much the same way about it. I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm a daredevil, but the death thing doesn't really bother me. It is inevitable. It's something that is going to happen. You know, and who's to say that we don't... Who's to say that our life isn't in just a big loop? I mean, I don't know, maybe that's why we have things like deja vu. Maybe we're living the same life over and over. Once we die, we start over again. I mean, who knows? Who's to say? And that's, once again, what makes this feel so interesting. But pretty much my thoughts on it, so...
You know, I remember when, like, Sam Kinison died, and there were witnesses there. They're saying that he was having an argument with someone that he didn't want to leave yet. He was having a good time. He was actually arguing with somebody, and finally he's like, all right, fine, I'll go. And then he died.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, that happens. I've read a lot of cases like that where, you know, if someone doesn't have cancer, you know, where they're just incoherent or whatever, but, you know, they're dying of whatever, and all of a sudden they're talking to someone.
Yeah, well,
you know,
my grandmother, when she passed away back in 2004, right before she died, I think that she was, having a conversation with my grandfather. He died 17 years before her, and they were very, very, very close. You know, they had 8 kids together, and they went through a lot together, and he was the love of her life, and she never got remarried or anything after he passed. And right before she died, she said his name, and she lifted her hand up, and she kind of cupped her hand like she was putting her hand in somebody else's hand. Now,
skeptics will say that you're putting down in the death process, and therefore these things will be kind in the death process, and your mind's just making all this up. But I really do think that she saw him, and I think that he was on the other side waiting for her.
Yeah, scientists, I mean, I'm a big advocate of science. I mean, I'm a huge advocate. I scream at people all the time about it. But they have no business trying to, they don't know what happens to a brain when it dies, because you only know that when you experience it and then you're dead. There's
right.
There's no data to, what am I trying to say here? There's no data to, like, go against to where you would get that information. They're just guessing, just like we're doing.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
And what they've done is they've stopped looking, because they say, this is what it is, and then they move on to something else, you know? Now, you have people like Gary Schwartz. Have you ever heard of him?
You know, I met a guy we met at the prison, I think might have mentioned his name, but I'm not familiar with him.
He was a professor at University of Arizona. And in the late 90s, around the turn of the century, he had a bunch of psychics in a trained study at the university. He had people like John Edward and a bunch of these other people. They're totally sequestered. You know, it's just it's a college-level experience. And he was a complete atheist. You know, when we die, we're dead. Nothing else happens. Well, through the course of this investigation, he is getting blown away, because all these psychics are getting all this information, and he, I mean, the guy essentially proved that we live on after we death. I mean, after we die, with our personalities.
Yes, absolutely.
He proved it. I mean, it was like a blurb on page 9. You know.
Yeah, and it's like he been into it totally, trying to disprove it, and he came out a believer, and that's what's so amazing.
Yeah. You got to look at something and get the information and data before you can make a decision about it. You can't just guess, you know. I think at the moment of death, I think it's a very calm experience. I think something happens maybe to the chemicals to where it says, all right, this is it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're always fighting till the last second that there's going to be something, and I think there's a point subconsciously where the brain goes, this is it, and just releases a mass amount of endorphins or something that, you know, make you all happy.
Right. Well, you know, something that goes back to one of Jeff's questions a few minutes ago about what happens when you die. You know, one of my personal beliefs are, you know, I believe a lot of things in threes, you know, spiritually. I believe a lot of things in threes. And I believe that as humans, we're made up of our physical body, our consciousness, which would also include our subconsciousness, and our soul. And for me personally, I believe that death, I believe that anything that we're capturing on the earth is the consciousness, or, you know, the person that was here. Their body might be gone, but their consciousness is living on after their body is gone. And the soul, for me personally, I do believe that it does go somewhere and does morph into something else. But I think that this experience that Gary had with the psychics, I think they were picking up that absolutely, and that's why we can communicate with these things, because their consciousness is still here on some level without a body.
Right. We may not actually go anywhere. We may just still stay here, but, you know, our definition of here and what here really is could be two totally separate things.
Right. That's what I was saying. I don't know if it just morphs or what into something different, but, yeah, we just don't know, and that opens up all those questions. Something definitely happens. We know for a fact something happens, but we don't know exactly what.
Right.
And it's kind of like the Big Bang Theory. I mean, we're still getting frequencies on the television from when the Big Bang happened millions of years ago, thousands of years ago. So, I mean, it could be that principle as well.
which is what we're catching on these EVPs on cameras, you know, it could be that principle. I mean, it's just, who knows? Be interesting to find out.
It almost becomes a philosophy than a science. You know, you just sit around and talk with it. Talk about it. I mean, that's really all you can do.
Yeah, and parapsychology as a whole, there's still so many gray areas. And it, like I said, one question leads into another question, and it's just, I mean, we have evidence, like the EVPs and things, but how, why, et cetera, those are the things that make you wonder what's going on, you know?
Yep. Well, my dog can see stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's how I knew I wasn't, like, just seeing stuff. You know, I look, and there she is, and all the dogs are staring at her.
Yeah,
and they're just looking at her. They're not. They're like, what's this? You know, hey, guys, listen, we got a minute before we got to go on break for, like, 10 minutes. Why don't you give out your site again, and then we'll take a 10-minute break.
It's AppalachianTruthSeekers.org. You guys hear us?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay.
Help and, me now. I don't want to die.
Yeah, if anyone listening wants to hear that EVP, AppalachianTruthSeekers.org, knock yourself out.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on there, and you're going to keep adding stuff, right?
On there.
All right, Joe, take us out, man.
Second Sight NYC. We will be broadcasting live on UFO Paranormal Radio on June 18th between 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will be covering the 2011 Paranormal Expo in Auburn, New York, live.
Hi, I'm psychic medium Chris George. Join us as we interview the who's who of the paranormal world, as well as many of the other guests attending the event. This is sure to be a fun-filled 2 hours, so you can all expect the unexpected.
We'll be conducting exclusive interviews with high-profile guests.
And as always, you can expect us to keep it real. Join us in the fun.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Church of Mavis with our guests Amanda Hall and the Appalachian Truth Seekers. We're back from break, and I just want to say real quick, next week, next Saturday is William Whitecrow and the Shaman to Do the Last Dance, and he is a medicine man. He studied with many tribes, and he will be coming to our show next Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern. And also, the next weekend will be Winter Lake, Lucifer in the Sky with Demons, interview with a Satanist.
When is that?
What's that?
When is that show about the demons?
Oh, there's a show coming up at the end of the month about a Satanist.
Yeah, that one. What's the date on that one?
It's, let me look. Let me look at my calendar here. That is on the 25th, Saturday the 25th.
Okay.
No, the 18th. No, Saturday the 18th.
Okay, great. I think that's one I definitely would like. I'm going to try to listen into that one for sure.
Well, he's been on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. He's wrote several books, and he's also helped police officers with cases for homicides and stuff. So it's definitely going to be an interesting show, no matter what you think about it. Whether you love it or you hate it, or it terrifies you, or you embrace it, whatever, it's a learning experience.
Hey, have you guys ever run into something like real evil or whatever?
Yes and no. I definitely think that the prison has demonic hauntings, for sure. There's just no way around it. You just can't have that much death, violence, and sex in one place. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar or not, but the actual architecture of the prison is in question as well. They've covered it up, but there's actually an inverted pentagram that was actually designed in part of the building, and it's the architecture of it is questionable. Some people say that it's an innocent design that's Masonic in nature. Others question it if it was done for some reason to call negativity to the prison. I mean, it's just a various opinion, but there's definitely been more hauntings there, though, for sure. So you have to be really careful when you're in this field. And you have to, one of my really good friends, we actually use as a referral, who's actually an ordained exorcist. She's worked for 30 plus years on cases with homes, individuals. And one thing that she says is you have to know your authority. You have to know your authority when you're dealing with these things. And if you don't, and if you allow yourself to feel intimidated and afraid, you obviously open the door. But as long as you know you're okay. So it's really, you know, putting your war paint on before you go into these kind of situations, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you just tell them that you're your own god and, you know, get the F out.
Yeah,
pretty much. It's just owning your own space and just you know, really putting your foot down, you know,
right.
And having your own authority. So, and that was probably the best explanation she's ever given me. Besides that, we had one case we worked on briefly last fall that was a murder case that was local in our area that was questionable, but I don't think it was demonic. I think it was just a very negative man. He was murdered in a drug deal, and I just think that he was just a very negative person. He was probably a crappy person when he was alive, so he was a crappy ghost, but he did some really bad things to our client that made us think that it might have been demonic, but I do not think it was demonic in nature.
Okay.
But now I've basically dealt with it before. Different groups, fortunately. I've experienced, you know, secondhand what demonic hauntings can do to individuals and stuff. So it's pretty scary stuff if you ever have an encounter with one.
All right, everybody, let's get to your, what we were talking about during the break, for each one of you to share, or whoever has a paranormal experience that you experienced in your past, and also what led you to becoming part of an investigative team for the Appalachian Truth Seekers.
Sure, Jeff. That's really interesting because I think that, you know, we kind of just jumped into the conversation about the prison and stuff, but really us given, you know, our history and kind of what got us to this point now, you know, for me, this is going to sound crazy and off the wall, and anyone that knows me, really knows me, knows I'm a really logical, rational person, but no one listening knows that, but I really am, but
When I was 15 years old, I had my first paranormal experience that really just shook me to my core, that made me interested in this entire field. I was dating a guy that lived down the street from a graveyard. And I was 15 and he was 17. So we would walk down the street to the graveyard to get away because we were teenagers, and we would go make out in the graveyard. I know it sounds macabre, but that's what we did. And it was October one year, and it wasn't quite dark yet. It was dusk. It was like 5:30 in the afternoon. And there's a life-size Jesus down a hill in this graveyard, and we just happened to be looking at the hill and the sun setting, and the statue is standing there with the Jesus' arms are outstretched, and he's looking up to the sky, and we were both just looking at him, and all of a sudden his arms come together like in a praying, like his hands are in a praying type motion, and then they open back up again, back to his hill posture. Well, before I could even turn around and ask my boyfriend, hey, did you see that? He was already running to the gate, and he left me. And so I had to run after him. He got back to his house first and was, like, laying in his bed, covered himself up. And when I was, like, wanting to ask questions. I wanted to sit there and talk about it. And they're like, hey, did you see that? What the hell happened? But he left me, and because he was scared, it scared me, which, you know, obviously we didn't last, but so I get back to his house, and I'm like, hey, let's talk about this. What just happened? And he would not talk about it, and he was shaking like a leaf, and he would not talk about it. But that was my first paranormal experience that made me really just want to pursue this field.
Jesus told you that chivalry was dead.
So, I know it sounds crazy, guys. Sorry.
When I see those Jesus statues, I think of the WTF. Can't say that word on the radio, but what the beep with Jesus with his hands out. But
yeah.
Nonetheless,
yeah.
Who's next?
Oh, Kristen.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little low.
All right. That better?
That's a little better, yeah.
All right. Well, I had my first paranormal experience. It was a family member of mine. My great-grandmother, she was very sick. She and I were very close. And the last time I saw her, of course, I was trying to meet her in the hospital, and she said, no, Chris, no more. And she said, I love you. Well, she died on my 16th birthday. And, of course, I grieved myself to death for 2 weeks. And, you know, shortly after she passed, I felt her sit on my bed, and she was stroking my head, and she said, Chrissy, it'll be okay. I love you. And I felt her, you know, stroking my head, sitting on my bed, and I stopped crying, and I went to sit up and never saw her again. I've never had any other signs of her or anything. To me, that was my closure with her. I've also had another experience later on in life, a couple years later. Something was in my house and, you know, manipulating my phone, and I was actually talking to somebody on the phone, and it just drained my phone battery and told the person I was talking to no. And then I actually had an experience of, I just have a regular CD player in my bathroom at the time, and I could actually sit there and watch the volume turn itself up and down and the radio turn itself on. So I've had quite a few, and you know, for me, I would like to experience more. I would like to get answers as to what's going on. So that's, you know, that's basically my reason for joining the group. Plus, I've known Amanda for many, many, many years. She's a strong leader. So I'm honored to be a part of it. So that's why I'm here. That's awesome.
Okay,
all right.
So Jason is going to tell you he's never had an experience, but at the prison, he had his first experience being a shadow person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was
there at the end when we were getting the EVPs, you hear about I Don't Want to Die and Help Now. And myself and one of the girls from Mountaineer Paranormal were sitting, well, actually all eight of us were sitting around the outer edge of this cell. She and I could see out the doorway, though, and we both saw a figure of a human moving across the hall toward the window. And she said, wow, did anybody else see that? And I said, yeah, I saw that. It was a shape going across the window. And we immediately thought, okay, well, maybe just a car was going by, throwing a shadow that looked like that. Well, it wasn't 5 seconds later that a car went by, and the shadow on the wall looked just like squares of light shining through a window pane, and they moved the opposite direction that the shadow we saw moved. And, you know, that's the only true experience we had, other than a very small one here, actually, at my house. It was one of our very first training sessions that we were doing, and in our downstairs, Amanda, switch for the downstairs is on the complete opposite wall from where you walk into the room.
Just to let you guys know that Jason and Becky's house is active, and the reason why we chose this place as one of our first places to train for our first case is because their children have had activity here, and their house is active. Okay, sorry, Jason.
So anyway, she walks across the room, turns all the lights out, says, okay, if anybody's actually here, when we come back, we want you to turn these lights on. She walks completely across the other side of the room in the dark. We all walk up the steps, come back down about 30 or 40 minutes later, and sure enough, the light was on. And we got quite a few good EVPs and things here from our house. So as far as any other direct experience, not ever had one, nothing as major as statues moving, but it's like I said, I'm searching for that elusive full body apparition that sit on the bed and talk to me.
Hey, have you ever been driving in your car and a song pop in your head and then, you know, 10 seconds later they play that song?
From time to time, yeah.
Yeah, that's a paranormal experience.
Yeah, or you're thinking about somebody and they're on your mind for like 5 minutes, or just on your mind on six, and you know your phone rings and it's them.
Amanda does that to me all the time.
Yeah, it's
just get ready to call you.
It's little itty bitty things like that. Once you start identifying those things, I bet you have them all the time and don't even know it.
Probably.
Yeah, I think it's part of what's called synchronicity and signs.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in both.
You're right, Becky.
Jeffrey?
I really don't think, you know, other than like at the prison with my bag moving, you know, I hear noises, but I'm more rational, I guess, in my mind, the way I deal with things. I
had one the other day at our house, though.
Yeah, I heard something. It sounded like someone walking. Jason was out of town. The kids were gone. And it sounded like somebody walking. And it was right after we got back from prison. It was the week after we got back. And I guess I'm just more harsh, I guess, if you really want to use. And I was laying in bed. It was still early. It was like 4:30 in the morning, and I just screamed, leave me alone, I'm not ready to get up, go away.
And it stopped.
Whether it was really something walking, or if it was just the air conditioning, the heating unit kicking on, I don't know, but the way I deal with things is just, leave me alone. I guess I take the
and
control.
That's her knowing her authority, and kind of what I was talking about a few minutes ago.
I'm a bully. I'm a bigger bully than he is. I'm alive.
It's my damn house.
That is my house. Go away.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it might have been paranormal because their house is active. We know that. And you hear footsteps. You say, stop it. I'm not ready to get up yet. And it stops immediately. If it was something like the AC or something like that, then why would it stop right on command unless it was just a coincidence, which is possible. I'm not going to say it's not, but it just seems like it's kind of interesting.
Our house, a little bit of history about our house, we literally sit right smack dab in the middle of a battlefield of the Civil War. Not only that, but we have a Indian ritual island less than a quarter of a mile past our house. And there's a lot of history about our area where we live, and a lot of death, a lot of anger,
war.
A lot of war. Indians angry because their land was taken away by the white man, literally right next door to us. So it doesn't surprise me if there is something here. I don't think it's anything haunting Jason or I or our kids. I just think it sees it as a stopping place.
Yeah, I don't think it's their house. I guess when I say their house is active, that's incorrect. If you want my actual theory about this area, I think it's the land. You know, earlier I was talking about the land could be haunted. I don't care what house is in this spot right here. I think it's the land that's active. And I would almost bet if they were to talk to some of their neighbors in this neighborhood about, do you ever have weird stuff like lights coming on or hear noises or what have you, if they wanted to really be honest about it, I would be really surprised if no one else in this neighborhood had activity, because I do think it's the land.
Amanda has more experiences at our house than Jason and I do.
But I'm more sensitive than both of them, too, though. So
I mean, she's even seen Jason standing in our kitchen when Jason was in our back bedroom.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. We had a meeting here that night, and I stopped at the store to get some 2 liters and stuff for the meeting, and I think I got some ice, maybe. I can't remember. Anyway, it had been raining that night, and I was wearing my work clothes from my day job, and I was ill. And when I got out of my car, I saw Jason as clear as you would see a person. Just, it looked just like Jason standing in his kitchen, and his kitchen window faces the front yard, wearing a long-sleeved black T-shirt, and at the sink, just looking at me, just staring at me. So anyway, when I started walking down the sidewalk, I fell. My heel slid where it was raining, and I fell, and I hit my head pretty hard, and everything I had in my bag just went everywhere. The 2 liters broke the Food City bags and all that stuff. So anyway, I'm getting up, and I'm just expecting him to run out the door any second and go, oh, my God, are you okay? And he doesn't come to the door. So at this point, I'm gathering everything up. My meeting notes are soaked, and I'm like, you know what? F you. You're not a very good friend right now. You just saw me.
You're fired.
She was mad. I was at home and she was mad.
Oh, I was pissed. I was pissed. So I get to the door and I'm banging on the door and no one comes to the door. And I pull my cell phone out. I'm getting ready to call him and go, what is wrong with his cussing out? Because I'm really furious at this point that, you know, he saw me fall and he didn't help me and he's my friend. So I keep banging and banging on the door. And finally he comes to the door. And he's wearing an orange work shirt, and his tie is undone.
And he's out of breath.
And he's out of breath, where he had just gotten home before me. He was in the back changing clothes and was nowhere near the front of the house. Because I said to him, why did you not come help me? You just saw me fall. And he goes, what are you talking about? And you could tell, and he wasn't even wearing what I saw him wearing. So I don't know who
or what?
Or what I saw in his kitchen. It looked just like him, but it wasn't him. That was freaky. I don't know how to explain that.
Maybe it was him, and he was just trying to get out of getting in trouble for...
Although that does sound like me, I'm not that bad of a friend.
Yeah.
So, does the alien and UFO topic ever come up within your group discussion-wise? And I know some of you have had some experiences. If you'd like to talk about that.
I really want our group to be very eclectic when it comes to the paranormal field, too. Not just ghosts and hauntings and entities, but also ufology and even cryptozoology, really interesting, you know. Like I was saying, I don't know many people in our area that haven't seen a UFO or know someone that hasn't seen a UFO. And, you know, we live in an area that is kind of in the country. Like, we have cities, of course, but a lot of it still very much in the country. And it's really, I would love to actually any of the areas that we live near that have a high UFO sighting, I would love to get the team together and go camping one night and just get our telescopes and just make a night of it.
And what's that, where are y'all located? Tennessee? What city?
Well, we're kind of split up. We're in northeast Tennessee and southwest Virginia. We're in an area called the Tri-Cities. So it's Johnson City, Kingsport, and Bristol. And like Kristen and I are in Virginia. And then Chris, our team member that couldn't join us, he's also in Virginia. And then Becky and Jason are in Tennessee. But we live right on the line. So even though we're in two different states, we're like 30 minutes from each other.
I lived in Kingsport, and when I got there, there was such UFO activity that it totally just shocked me. And then I went online and started searching to see if anyone else was having UFO activity in Kingsport, Tennessee, and all sorts of stuff came up, and it really shocked me that that place was such a hot spot, and I seen firsthand that it was. Through many UFO encounters or glimpses of bizarre space oddities in the skies of Kingsport, Tennessee. So that's definitely a location that I know is a hot spot.
It must be all the chemicals that Eastman's putting in the air.
I don't know. I mean, I saw what I thought was a UFO when I was six. I picked up my dad's hunting binoculars on my grandparents' barn and was just looking at everything, and I saw what looked like the color of like chrome, like muted chrome, shaped like a Hershey's Kiss, big enough to hold like maybe like one person, and it was like floating kind of, and it sort of just disappeared behind the mountain, and I was going crazy trying to tell my dad what I just saw. And of course my dad is the biggest like practical, logical, none of that stuff exists. So, of course, he just thought I was just a kid playing with his binoculars, making stuff up. But I'll never forget that. I'll just never forget it. I mean, I was 6 years old, and I can still see it in my mind right now.
Nice.
Yeah. My dad thinks I'm crazy for doing any of this stuff. But I was the same way. I'll never forget. And it was 20 or 25 years ago. I remember him coming home one night, and he had been driving down the interstate here and said he had seen what looked like a ball of fire, and it wasn't coming from the sky toward the ground. It was traveling straight down the interstate, just came from behind the car, kept on going, and wasn't on the ground, wasn't headed toward the ground. It was streaking just straight across the sky. But he doesn't believe in any of this stuff, but for him to actually speak out loud that he saw something like that.
He's ex-Marine.
Yeah.
He's logical. I don't believe that stuff.
Yeah,
and
for him to speak it out loud like that, you have to know my dad. That was pretty major to me to hear him tell that.
This is the part that I'm totally skeptic. So I'm
right with Grayson. That's why 3 minutes will have to come visit me first.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, I know the part that I'm skeptic. But if you want to look at it one way, I mean, ghosts are from history, energy that was left, residual, whatever. And you got to think, I mean, who's to say that there isn't something for, I mean, based on the... I was talking about earlier. So I mean, anything's possible. But I need little.
Jason and I were talking about that the other day.
Marvin to come see me.
Why do we consider ourselves so superior that there couldn't be something else out there? I mean, we can see galaxies and stars light years away from us with the new telescopes and stuff. I mean, what's to say that we are alone? I mean, but I'm still one of those logical people, I want to see it to believe it type people.
I interviewed a guy for the group that wasn't able to join because he just had so many other obligations and his job schedule and stuff. But anyway, he's an ex air flight controller. He worked out in Phoenix. He now resides in North Carolina. And that's all he did for years. and then he tested colored blind, and he had to retire early because you can't be colored blind being an air traffic controller. But anyway, some of the store interviewed him. I said, you know, do you believe in ghosts, paranormal? And he's like, no, but I'm willing to have an experience. And the next question was, do you believe in UFOs? Have you had an experience? And he said, absolutely, 100%. This guy was really logical, really practical. But he said some of the pilots that would come back with some of the stories they would have just completely would astonish him. He said pilots that were, you know, practical, logical, don't believe in ghosts, don't believe in anything, like, unless you can see it, touch it, smell it, eat it, it doesn't exist, would come back and tell him that they would see things they could not explain. And that was really interesting, was hearing his stories about working with the different pilots over the years in different parts of the country and stuff.
Well, here's something with alien contactees. There are many stories of people having UFO alien contactee experiences, and while they see the aliens, they also see with the aliens deceased loved ones who have passed away and gone into the other realm. So these beings also could be caretakers of the dead on some level and of the earth. And also, I believe it's all connected and it's all one pretty much, from looking for to extraterrestrials to the spiritual world. So either way, it's just all one and connected.
It could be our relatives and stuff like that, zipping around in the Jetson mobile or something. I mean, who knows?
Already made it to the Jetson before us.
I've just figured out life. If we turn into little golden ball tadpoles and we're sitting in the afterlife swimming around like, you know, lost sperm, then no wonder we come back here, because it sucks there.
Yeah, I don't want to think about when I'm going to turn into a sperm cell.
The Buddhist philosophy is the ball of light, right?
Minus the tail, yeah.
Yeah, they're under siege by fire ants, and they won't kill them. They have a tree that they pray under, and it was taken over by fire ants.
You've got that energy, but you ultimately, some believe that you did get reincarnated into things that you are worth, as you've led your life to believe. So, yeah. It could be a grasshopper, it could be, you know, a stick.
I hate a spider, considering every spider I see I kill. I hate a spider.
As long as I know where they're at.
Now,
if I know where they're at, they're not crawling on me, I'm fine. I've had them come down from the ceiling on a web. I'm sitting here on the computer, and all my eyes cross, and there's like some little spider going right in front of my face. He's so close, my eyes are crossing, and I'm like screaming like a little girl.
I had one cut. I was laying in a water bed, and the stupid thing came from the ceiling, and I couldn't get away. I was trapped in the water bed, and I was
wrapped around in the blankets.
Things.
And then he disappears, and you don't know where he's at, and that's the worst.
And the worst is laying in the bed and actually feeling him crawl on your face and wake up the next day and he's in your bed. It's terrible.
See, those things are just not natural to me. Anything that has that many eyes and that many legs, it's not natural. That was a mistake. What?
Yeah. She can't handle spiders and bats, but we can throw her in any demonic haunted place we can.
It fit right in, man.
Yeah, we know what's important to babies.
I'm just relaxed. I mean, I guess that's where, you know, go back to the very beginning. I'm just not sensitive of things. I get very relaxed. But if something's crawling across me or landing in my hair, I'm going to freak out.
Hey, man, I used to live in crappy apartments in Philly way back when, and cockroaches would run across your face in the middle of the night, man. You shoot up, and you're like, ah!
Handle as a roach, yeah.
That was bad. Pretty soon you just get used to it and accept it.
Yeah.
So
what's your next case?
Well, let's see. We've got a residential follow-up coming up next weekend, actually. And then we're going to take a little break probably for a few weeks to enjoy the summer, spend the 4th of July with our families and friends and stuff, and just sort of kick back, get a cold one, go to the pool, that kind of thing. And then probably towards the middle of July, we're going to start back up. We've got about 3 or 4 leads we need to follow up on. Those are pretty much residential in nature. And then in August, we've got the train station, which is local in this area. It's a historic, I don't know how old it is, but I think Kristen might know because she's our archivist. She's probably already pulled it. But it was closed down for years, and it got renovated recently in the last few years. Now it's a banquet reception hall area. But they are they're letting us come in August and spend the night and investigate with them.
I wonder if they had a lot of activity when they were renovating it. Well, also a lot of workers. You should maybe talk to, like, the workers who worked on that renovation and see if they had anything happen.
It looks like the first train that they had was in 1856, so that shows you how old it is. Well, the renovations are completed. It's been completed for a couple of years now, but some history on a train station is that years ago, when I was a teenager, it was open, and it had a couple of different bars and restaurants, and even had, like, a place in the downstairs for teenagers to go and hang out. And when I was younger and I would go and listen to bands and stuff, I remember it being freaky back then. It just has a weird feeling to it. And then it closed down for years, and it sat there
and stared at you as you drove by.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It just sat there, and you felt like it was staring at you. And it's a beautiful, it's an architecturally beautiful building. And then finally, it was renovated beautifully and turned into, like I said, like a reception banquet hall. You know, class reunions are done there, proms are done there, wedding receptions are done there. And I talked to the manager last year that was managing the event, and he was like, no, sorry. But they have a new manager now who's a woman who actually worked for the Martha Washington Inn, which is in Abingdon, which is known to be very haunted, very active. But it's still open, so of course they don't let you investigate because there's still an open, functioning inn. But she had many, you know, paranormal experiences working at the inn. So when I just happened to contact her out of the blue and said, hey, you know, I'm with Appalachian Truth Seekers. We'd love to come out. And she's like, okay, sure. When would you like to come out? And I was like, holy cow, really? So we're in there in August.
Nice.
Definitely really cool. So that's in August. We'll have to keep us updated about that for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was telling guys, that we definitely want to follow up with you guys and give you guys like an update on how it goes and stuff and let you know what kind of evidence we get. And we're also going to try to go to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. It's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I don't know if that'll be this fall or maybe it'll be our spring trip next year, depending on finances and family and holidays and all of that. But that's definitely, it's about 3 hours from where we live, but it's very active, and you pay to go there, but you get a 22-hour investigation, and you get to actually stay in the hospital room the entire night.
Yeah, you have to.
But, I mean, you get to actually sleep there and eat there. Like, they put you in to investigate, but you actually also get a room to yourself. It's really interesting how they set you up. So you don't have to pay for a hotel room when you go down there. That's pretty awesome.
So it's a hospital, right? And it's actually still open?
No. It's not a functioning hospital anymore, but the way they set up paranormal investigators is that there are rooms that you can actually rest in.
Gotcha.
I know it sounds far out there, but it's because you don't have to actually. Usually when we do out-of-town investigations, we have to worry about hotel expenses and all of that, and this would just be the gas, the money to get in, and go. And they actually take your food in for you. It's through a, it's not like a 7-course dinner, but they bring food in for you, so you don't ever leave.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were getting served hospital food or something.
No, actually, it's a ladies' catering business, actually. But it's one of those places that you check in and you just don't leave until you're done. So.
Or maybe never.
Yeah.
And, hey, I'll have my own bed to sleep in, and I won't have to prop myself up in the on the wall.
Comes with a free straitjacket.
Hey, yeah.
But it's, for other groups that have been there, it's apparently very active. And the lady that actually books their investigations is a retired ghost hunter who, that's why I think it's so awesome. It's a low fee, and it's, she understands the importance of what we do in this field. So, and she's not just trying to make money. So it's really nice to connect with her. So I'm looking forward to that one, too.
Yeah, I love that you guys do this, man. It's very commendable.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. If this is something that they say that when you figure out what your drive is, what your passion is in life, it just feels right. And honestly, I've always kind of felt weird and out of place most of my life because I am strange. But
welcome to the club, man.
this is a realm that I feel like a fish in water. So
spiritually, as far as do you think you were a spirit that came here from another realm to incarnate into this realm? And the way I look at things too in the broader sense is, you know, a lot of people that see UFOs and alien beings, who's to say that these beings are not also our teachers from the spiritual realm? And, for instance, you know, obviously we were a spirit, before we came here and we incarnated into this body. And then when we die, we make a transition back to that realm. And perhaps also, there are a lot of guides and teachers and what we would call angels and things like that around us. I often say, jokingly, that I come with an entourage. I think everyone's haunted on some level. But I'm just curious to, spiritually, how do you, your findings so far, as far as you being involved in this investigative team?
Well, for me, when people meet me and they talk to me and stuff, they always say that I don't know how to answer your question, but I know that people say I remind them of an old soul because they say I'm wise beyond my years. I give, so I don't know, maybe, possibly, because I definitely don't relate to people my own age. I definitely don't relate to a lot of people, period. I have amazing people skills where I get along with people just fine. I'm not antisocial or anything, but as far as mainstream and really, I don't know. For me, I definitely do believe I'm an old soul. I don't know how or where I came from or as far as that goes, but I definitely believe that I am an old soul, and I think that sometimes you can meet people and just sort of know it's like, this is like, I don't know how to say, like, this is like their first time around here when you talk to them, and they're so young and naive. Even if they're like middle age, they're still young and naive. And then you've got people that are younger, that are wise beyond their years. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense and would explain a lot about this country.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I think you just nailed it right there. That's what's wrong with America.
America. So, what is your site link again? I want to make sure we get all the information out for everything.
We got about 9 minutes left.
Okay, it's AppalachianTruthSeekers, all one word, .org. And when you go visit our site, our Facebook link is also on there. So if you visit us and you like us, go to Facebook and let us know. Like us.
So are you always looking for other members in your, you know, in your area? Is it like an open, is there a process people have to go through to get into your group, or is it just you guys and no one else like Scooby-Doo, or what? What's up with that?
No, I mean, right now it is, but when we take a breather, I am going to be looking for a couple of other members. I would like to have a few more members, especially maybe have at least one more guy to even out the numbers and, you know, at least have a couple more members. But we do have a process. When I started up the group, I wanted a screening process to see how serious people were about this field. I don't want people that just want to do it because I think it's cool. Cool, and it's awesome, don't get me wrong, but I want people that are serious. I mean, we're going into buildings a lot of times that are old, and you got to have common sense about you. You don't want to get your full self killed.
So we do have a screening process, just a simple application that asks people, you know, the basic questions about why they want to join, what they can add to the team.
Mathematical
equations, no. But blood type, mother's maiden name, no, nothing like that. But just a basic screening process. And then, of course, we have a training session. We wanted to go through, like, at least two or three training sessions with us. And we actually use actual cases, investigations, as their training, like on-the-job training, if you will. And, you know, from there, then they really are incorporated into the team.
Have you thought about branching out, like having, you know, a few people in other states, like other teams?
We do.
Oh, you do? Cool.
We don't have other people on our team, per se, but we have a connection in Texas. We've made connections with groups that are in Louisiana, Mountaineer Paranormal that we've worked with in West Virginia. They've offered to come down here and hunt with us. We'll definitely go back up there and hunt with them. That's what it's all about. This community is small and making connections. And, like, we've already told them, you know, from Mountaineer, they were so warm and welcoming at the prison that if they come down here to hunt, they got a place to stay. So, you know, that's what it's all about, is just, you know, making connections. And that way, it's just, it's networking within this community. Like I said, it's really small, so it's nice to branch out and meet different people.
Definitely. And it's grown so much over the years. Like, it's just booming. There's so many people interested in the paranormal and, you know, these fringe subjects now. It's just freaking grew so much lately.
Yeah, well, you can, if you're serious about it, you can go and get results. You know, it's not like you have to take a, you have to have a master's degree in ghost hunting to be able to do anything.
I mean, it's the newest kind of science. I mean, if you think back, you had the Dark Ages, nothing was going on there, and then you had so many scientists emerged, so many new ideas, and look how far they got. And this is just the point that we're at now. This is just kind of like a new era. I mean, it's era. It's late. but, you know, I mean, it's just, we're human, and we ask questions. And like I said, this is just the newest thing, and I believe we're going to make a lot of leeway with it. And
yep.
I'm excited.
Stanton Friedman made a cool comment on our show. He said, it's paranormal until science catches up to it. Then once science catches up to it, you know what I mean? It becomes mainstream.
Yeah. And there's just so many skills, though, I don't see that ever happening, at least not in our lifetime.
No. Hey, your Facebook link doesn't work.
Oh, I'll fix it. Okay, our web administrator is right on that. Thank you.
All right, if I click on it, it just goes right to Facebook, right to the main page.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. He's actually pulling it up right now, so we will get that fixed. Thanks for letting us know, guys.
No problem.
Like, wait, I want to go to their site.
Well, we're at the end of the show, right, Guy?
I guess we got about 5 minutes.
Any closing statements? I also, one thing for me, I've had ghost experiences. I mean, there's no doubt that there's other beings in other multiple realms around us. But the technology that, you know, that's developing with these ghost boxes, and April Page Slaughter was on one of our shows mentioned this electronical type device that she talked to her father through. The technology that's evolving in the cyber necromancy is getting quite fascinating. I find that part of it very fascinating. Geology that's developing that allows you to supposedly, you know, apparently speak to the dead.
Yeah, and this guy who's in their garage is doing it too. It's not like a company, it's a guy in a garage or, you know, in his workroom.
Are you talking about Frank Fox?
Yeah, just these type of, there's other devices too I've seen them use where it has a, like a word database and, you know, and some guy just invented that, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, if you want to go back to where the original idea of communicating with the dead electronically, you want to look at the scientist Tesla, Nikolai Tesla. A lot of his ideas, Edison actually got a hold of, and Edison was actually a much better businessman than Tesla, but Tesla actually was on to communicating with the dead electronically when he passed away. And when he passed away, the government took a lot of his ideas and stuff like that. But he's somebody that you might want to research if you're interested in that, because he was way beyond his years. I mean, way beyond his years.
Oh, yeah, he did a lot of things. I mean, he created a self-contained earthquake just by finding the sound resonance of a building. You know, you just start shaking the building, and that's all that was shaking. It was like the earth was quaking.
Okay, so you're familiar with him then.
Tesla is like one of my heroes, man.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, I agree. So, very cool.
Alrighty, is that the grand finale of the show? Thanks, everybody.
That's the grand finale.
Thanks
so much for this opportunity. We really appreciate it. And, Jeff, I'll stay in touch with you and give you updates now and then on how things are going. And, thanks, guys. I mean, we just can't say thank you enough. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, no problem. It was great, man.
And I'll get the archives, and we'll share it on our site and everything like that, and push support for you guys.
Hey, can you guys friend me on Facebook?